So what about this other study? As it often happens in oncology, we first hear about it in a press release right after ASCO. This came out about this ELEVATE-TN trial. This is first line acalabrutinib. So this is acalabrutinib, obinutuzumab alone, and then chlorambucil, obinutuzumab. And we'll see when it's presented, and we'll kind of get more granularity to what's going on. But it looks like kind of what you might expect, but also that the monotherapy arm was very effective and better than chemoimmunotherapy. Any thoughts about this? Obviously, we need to see the data, but from what you've heard, how you think it's going to fit in the equation?
Well, I think it's going to lead to approval of acalabrutinib in the frontline setting. The ibrutinib was compared to chlorambucil, which I don't think anybody would agree is a reasonable control arm these days. So the bar is a little bit higher with this particular trial because they're comparing it to chemoimmunotherapy. Nevertheless, as expected, the outcomes and the durability of responses and the progression-free survival is much better with a BTK inhibitor-based therapy than chemoimmunotherapy. There are other trials that have looked at BTK inhibitor therapy, monotherapy in combination with a CD20 antibody. We did a randomized trial at Anderson of ibrutinib plus or minus rituximab. At ASH, there was a trial that was presented in the frontline setting. This was the Alliance trial that evaluated ibrutinib versus ibrutinib plus rituximab versus BR. Now, none of those trials have shown an improvement in outcomes with the addition of a CD20 antibody to the BTK inhibitor-based therapy. I'm expecting this trial to show the same thing. And my own personal opinion is that it's probably because with all of these trials, the BTK inhibitor-based therapy is continuous BTK inhibitor-based therapy. We're not stopping the BTK inhibitor. So that really drives the progression-free survival curve more so than addition of other things that are more cosmetic in terms of reduction of the white count, et cetera. They don't really have a, you're not looking at the depth of remission and how that correlates with outcomes in the setting of continuous BTK therapy. So I think if we were to do a trial with fixed duration BTK inhibitor therapy, we could probably show an improvement with the addition of a CD20 antibody, but none of the trials were designed that way. So we don't recommend giving a CD20 antibody if you're thinking about putting a patient on BTK inhibitor-based therapy, which is continuous.
So it'll be interesting if, as you hypothesize, that acalabrutinib gets approved in the first-line setting. Of course, obviously, it'll depend a lot on exactly the approval and reimbursement, all this other stuff. But it'll be interesting to see what people use outside of a trial setting. It was interesting when we started to see this in mantle cell. We present these scenarios at our meetings. We ask investigators, et cetera. And of course, when we presented people who had atrial fib or history of bleeding, they immediately, for mantle cell, they immediately moved to acalabrutinib. But the interesting thing was we saw, even now, you see a lot of investigators moving to acalabrutinib mantle cell just for a patient being older. No cardiovascular, nothing, just being older. Do you see maybe that's where things will head with CLL?
For sure. I mean, it may be driven more by what a physician's experience has been, what their impression is of toxicities. We do know that with ibrutinib, for example, the older the patients are, the more likely they are to have a side effect or toxicity associated with ibrutinib therapy. So probably in the future, the first choice of BTK inhibitor for frontline therapy and for salvage therapy will depend on physician experience and impression about the toxicity profile. Because these are treatments that are highly effective, we do want to be able to have the maximum benefit for our patients from whatever treatment that we choose for those patients.